sick of homeless.
Microphones are live?
I feel so sorry for some of them. I went out for a walk with Allison. Or no, I went out with
Dave. Do you want to start it?
I'd like to call to order the Stanton City Council Special Study Session, 5 PM for Tuesday, March 8th. Let's see, special orders of day, new business. 3A, Community Needs Assessment, 2022 results presented by Provolsky Research.
Mr. Mayor Protem, if you do not mind.
Oh, roll call, sorry.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
We begin the meeting at 5 PM. Councilmember Taylor?
Here.
Councilmember Van?
Here.
Councilmember Warren?
Here.
Mayor Protem Ramirez?
See.
And Mayor Shaver is currently absent. We now proceed with item 3A. I'm not sure if you'd like to introduce that, sir, or just have Mr.
Sure, yeah. Through the city's ARPA funding, we've commissioned a community needs assessment that has taken place over the last few weeks. And with us tonight is Adam Probolsky of Probolsky Research to present the results of the study and answer any questions that you might have.
Cool. Good evening, members and staff. My name is Adam Probolsky, Probolsky Research. We had a really enjoyable time working with the city on this project, and I think we found some very interesting data to us. Found that you were kind of different than your peers, that other similarly situated cities. You've got some pretty cool attributes that make you there, and some challenges that in this survey. So I'll get right in and feel free to ask questions between or at the end if prefer. So survey intended to be as to take as wide a swath as possible of your residents, meaning the very large number of residents comparatively. To give you an illustration, we surveyed 400 residents in the city. Our typical statewide poll has 900. And is very predictive of outcomes, of whether it's a, I don't mean to bring politics into it, but it's kind of an easy way of explaining things, you know, predict who wins for governor or what ballot measure. So for 900 statewide, 400 is quite robust for a city like this. We reached out to residents on landlines, because some people still have them, on mobile phones, and then certainly we emailed them and texted them to onboard them to an online. Each of those instances, the phone calls were initiated in English, but switched to one of the other several languages, including Spanish, Vietnamese, Mandarin, Korean, Arabic, when a language barrier was presented or someone asked to speak one of those languages. You can see on the right-hand side there, the vast majority of people preferred to take the survey in Spanish, in English, but we did have 15% in Spanish, 7% in Vietnamese, and 1% each in Korean, Mandarin. We believe that we have a much more accurate research product because of the opportunity for people. Caution, they don't only speak those languages, both people speak English or vice versa, but it was their preferred language. It really gave some more accurate. Each of those cases, the opportunity was to choose the language that they preferred, whether on phone. I'm going to get right into some of the data. I'm going to skip the key findings and recommendations because you're going to hear me comment. But the first question is an open-ended question. It's one that where people get to just tell us what's on their mind. Top issue is homelessness is top of mind. And I'll tell you now, as you may have already seen, this is a theme, very significant, serious theme. We don't tend to see numbers shoot out like that in this kind of an open-ended. It's usually fairly tight as far as the number of people say various different things. This is a unique situation. Obviously, COVID's still big on people's minds. Housing affordability is something that we see as a theme as well. And I'll caution again, housing affordability is not kind of that necessarily the kind of public-private partnership required affordable housing scenario. It's just generally, where am I going to live when I retire? Where are my kids going to live? It's this concern. Moving on, where people get their information about the city of Stanton, again, kind of unique. Your website is a repository, is a place where people go to, which is not normally the case in a lot of local jurisdictions. So that's either a great testament to the quality of the website or just a unique situation where your residents feel like they can go. If you look down the list, it's also very significantly in other online environments. So your digital presence is very important. In this case, obviously, they were able to choose more than one. Also interesting, not too far down the list, is your cable channel. So your own properties are really places where people are going and looking for information. So as we go through, and I'll talk about things that I think are important to highlight, those are the things you're probably going to talk about the most. Looking then at where people are generally otherwise living online, where do they spend their time? Again, they can choose more than one. Your residents are living on Facebook, and they're living on Instagram and YouTube more so. That doesn't mean that the other places where people typically congregate, like in Nextdoor or other things, are irrelevant. But if I was going to be expending resources, I would be spending them and time on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. That's where the content that I would be producing would be focused. We then ask for people to prioritize a list. This is not open-ended. This is a specific list of where they want city leaders and decision makers to spend their time. Again, they were able to take more than one, but there's a very clear standout here. And I don't know, I don't want to be dramatic, but that number at 66% saying they're concerned about homelessness and they want you to address it, whatever it is you are doing to address homelessness, you should be talking about every single day. Every single little accomplishment, any you know, one more bed, one more person help, one more dollar towards a program is a major accomplishment that you should be singing every single day because they want this badly. We did a countywide poll on this subject, this is not my words or my thoughts, but the concern internally over homelessness is not necessarily a compassionate concern. This is not, oh, I want to help them. This is get them out of my sight. And so, again, this is not my commentary on it. This is what people are saying. So I cannot stress enough, the resources that you put towards homelessness are going to be extremely well received, even if it's a dramatic increase in resources. Will be very well received. After that, you see housing affordability being a serious concern, traffic congestion, which is kind of a symptom, quite frankly, of a economy coming back in a way that we saw, you know, more than 4 or 5, 6 years ago. So that's actually an encouraging thing, kind of, you know, similar to Newport Beach in that regard, where we're kind of happier and more financially stable. So we're concerned about things like how long it takes to get to the freeway. And you can see some other things that are on that list, but I'll skip the drama on homelessness, but it's significant. So next up, which of the following, you know, setbacks? We asked people, but this was very focused on COVID and relief related matters. What setbacks do people have? Well, general medical challenges, difficulty paying bills, and you can see the other things that kind of came up there, like loss of employment, educational setbacks. The things that we've kind of typically seen, you know, in news media and what we've seen our neighbors and friends experience. There is something I think that's interesting on this chart is 45%, if you round up, say really nothing. I've not experienced anything specific necessarily. And I think that's an encouraging thing, right? It just didn't affect their lives. A lot of people have gotten to work at home and really haven't had able to use Instacart, and it wasn't that big of a deal to them. And that's a big part of your constituency. But obviously a whole group had all these different other concerns that came up. We did ask, where have you gone to get resources? So that's among the people who specifically had some concerns, had some challenges. And we asked those folks, where did you go? First, family members, friends, places of worship. And that's kind of encouraging, right? From a whole community where people got their resources from community rather than necessarily coming to City Hall. But if you look at all the different city programs and add them together, they do come to 23%, which is a pretty sizable chunk. So those different individual programs were small, but putting them together, a big part of your community was turning to the city in order to get support. So very important for relief. Next, we ask a question, which of the following recreation opportunities would you like to see the city improve or expand upon? We had, just before that, if you read the kind of paragraph there, given them a very basic explanation with some very limited words explaining $9 million coming for ARPA, you know, where might you want these resources to go within the confines of the potential places where you spend those money. Parks are number one at 41%, we round up. And then open spaces, walking trails, sports fields. You can kind of see this this theme of recreation here. And then, not to be ignored, arts and culture, but really high on that list, the outdoor experience is very important. I know that's kind of have constraints to accomplish some of these things, but to the extent that you, again, can, in incremental ways, make improvements towards these things, you're going to have a really happy public. So then we asked them about programs specifically that could be improved or expanded. Really high on the list there is youth sports, followed by tutoring and education, after-school programs, activities. I don't want to dismiss, again, things like adult sports, which are at the bottom of the list, but those other things towards youth are really what it seems to be people care the most about. And also activities for older adults are we asked them about health and wellness issues. Do you and your family have concerns about now? Ability to access affordable health care is number one. Access to mental health services. So something that I thought was interesting, that number two there, 31%, saying mental health services. We're seeing a renewed or a new interest in and willingness to talk about mental health issues. And you've got just under a third of your residents saying that is something that they want access to, and they don't necessarily. So something that is emerging that you might want to consider looking at. Availability of testing, keep in mind this was done months ago, so maybe less and less concern, but still something that was high on the list. So see the other things that people feel like they need some help with. Next, economic instability issues in your household. Currently, this is kind of that in the tail end of COVID here, what are people experiencing? Affordability of housing. So a theme that we see come throughout, ability to pay their mortgage, ability to pay for food and meals, kind of beautiful things, sustainable employment. Nothing off the charts here, but all these things are things that are of real import to your residents and things that they are experiencing. Also a big group say unsure. Should City of Stanton promote economic stability for local businesses? How should that be done? Kind of interesting here, we gave them a list of options. You're spending city resources on promoting stability amongst small businesses, which in general we have known from other research have enjoyed really high support in general. So they're saying that you should help with hiring and retaining staff, providing grants for small businesses, provide revitalization funds to improve frontage and parking, and things like that. I'm not sure exactly from a policy standpoint how you help with hiring and retaining staff, but to the extent that you figure out a way to do that, I think you got a winner. And so that's your challenge as staff and policymakers to figure out how to use the resources you have to make that happen. We get now into a series of questions that make you stand out as a community. We ask them how important the visibility of sheriff's deputies are on the streets when determining your overall feeling of safety. 92% say it's important. These are really strong numbers. And numbers that really support the idea of your current presence of your sheriff's deputy. And I know the focus wasn't on necessarily on law enforcement here, but we have seen other communities where these numbers aren't as good, where people are actually, you know, more concerned about seeing deputies. They have a concern over, they have fear and trepidation. That's not something we see in dramatic form here. Obviously, 7% say unimportant, and that could represent some other concerns, but the vast, vast majority say it's very important. I'm going to just move through this next set of slides to illustrate how we look at data, but I'm not going to go through them after this. This just shows the intensity, so very important of that original 92%. Very important is 60%, and very unimportant is 21% of this small group. So the point here is the intensity is dramatically emphasized. We also look at the data based upon all kinds of demographics. And again, I'm going to show you these because there's a lot of them, but I'll skip going forward unless there's something to point out. But we are definitely going to be working with staff to help target any kind of communication outreach. So first, you see data based on gender, and then based on age group, and then based on ethnicity, self-select. So you kind of see some minor, some differences there, but really small groups, let's say, for people who don't choose male or female as their gender. So those numbers can really pop out. Also, small numbers of Black respondents in the city, so those numbers can really significantly change based on one person. We also look at the data based upon district, and then by mode, so whether they responded by phone or online, and even further by landline or mobile, an email or text. Sometimes we see different data based upon how someone responds to the survey. Maybe someone might be more honest in an online format, and then we know, oh, okay, we've got something more to do here, got a little more work to figure out. We then look at the data based upon whether people own or rent, and then the type of living situation, single-family home, et cetera, and then also by income. So really, a lot of different ways of looking at the data. Then we look at it even more based upon how they get around to work, based upon their employment status, and based upon where it is that they work. So really, a lot of different ways of looking at the data and giving an opportunity to target different communities with messages that are important to them, and making sure you're communicating based upon what's important to them. So next up, we have a question where we ask, how important is crime prevention programs when determining overall feeling? 96%. So all of these in succession you'll see are really big. So you don't get to kind of turn down the volume necessarily on any of your public safety programs because they really are very important to the vast majority. So I'm gonna, like I said, skip through the demographics and get to the next question here, the importance of addressing homelessness when determining safety. Lo and behold, 98% say it's important. I'll say it now because you'll see numbers later on. I'm typically earlier in a survey explaining that this is not an academic exercise. So this, while this looks like an A+, if these numbers were at, if you see a chart that's at 56%, that's not an F. We're Americans, we don't agree on anything. So when you have 56% agreeing, it's a pretty big majority. When you have 98% agree, there's nothing else in the world that's important. So this is really a reinforcement of whatever you're doing on homelessness, or whatever you can do, is gonna be critical. Next, we ask a question about the importance of community engagement programs, like Coffee with a Cop. 83 or 84% say that it's important. A little less knowledge of it, but certainly something very high on the list. Public safety, a big concern for people, and something that people are really wanting to see. Importance of the visibility of graffiti when determining the overall feeling of safety. 84% say it's important, presumably the removing of graffiti. So a high important program, something you're gonna, whatever your abatement program is, turn up the volume on getting rid of it, you're going to be in a good place with your residents. They're going to be happy. Next up, we have a question about the importance of programs and services for crime victims, 96%, and survivors, 96%. So if there was some expectation that you could have turned down the volume on them, you don't really get to without them being concerned about that. We next ask a question, open-ended question, is there anything else that didn't come up in this survey? You know, something that we didn't get to, subject matter wise. Interestingly enough, you've got 61% at the bottom here that say no, nothing else we didn't get to in the survey talked about. But what's number one on the list is homelessness, even though we talked a lot about it. So it's ever present. I'm going to then kind of skip through the next several slides, but to get to a demographic slide, which shows what your demographics look like, and what your city residents look like. And this is just them individually, but here they are as a whole. Just like most of America, you've got some more men in general, fairly well distributed age-wise. Most people are driving a car to work, that's no surprise. You've got kind of this middle-income group here in the 75 to 100,000 to 90,000. You're heavily Latino and Asian, and here's the modes, language, primary language first taken, and then the language that people said they speak in their household, that there might be something else that they speak in their household. We also look at the demographics based upon employment status, employment location, and what they're living in. I know that is a massive amount of data, we are on Team Stanton to work with staff going forward, to work with council on whatever way you want to present that. And as communication and outreach happens, we are here to gut check and gut check data to kind of give advice on how to do that.
Slide number 8.
Okay. Just close your eyes if you have an issue with
yeah,
flashing images.
Second from the bottom. That number, does that stand out to you at all?
Business relief program or the?
No, the second from the bottom. I have not seeked out help.
Yeah. Sure. I didn't reach out for anyone. Well, we have a lot of people. I don't think it stands out. I mean, think of how people characterize what they need. If I actually called the city and said I need something from some specific program, I'd probably note that as people did here. But if I'm a senior and then my neighbor was the one who did the grocery shopping for me over the course of the last some period of time during COVID, maybe I don't say I reached out to someone for help. Or if I got to work from home and didn't have to go to work and my life didn't change too much, I probably didn't have any need to reach out. So not too surprised. But other than the fact that it's only
1%. Right. Second question, what about language? I saw that 75, 70 some odd percent identify as English speaking. Did that jump out at you?
Don't identify, they chose English as the language they chose. So I think there's all kinds of dynamics with that. In my house, there's several languages spoken. Obviously, if someone calls me, I'm going to choose English. I don't know how the other people in my house will answer questions. But I think it's about choice. It's not choice. You saw the last slide. A lot of other languages spoken.
Right. Great. And then last question. Do you do something similar with business communities, this type of survey?
Oh, sure. Sure. It's actually a little more challenging because calling the sandwich shop day they're busy or calling a part of Orca or a block, who are you going to get a hold of, who's the manager you want to talk to, but yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great, thank you. Yes.
You had mentioned on your slide that you have about 400 folks responding to the survey and you got their information. Talk about how you got the contacts for the folks that you chose to reach out to do the survey and the response rate you got?
Yes. So, good or bad, in America today, there are big businesses that can collect consumer data that essentially anyone who has ever paid a tax, bought a cell phone, paid for any sort of a magazine subscription, kind of any experience in the world. If you're over 18, consumer data warehouses collecting your information. And they may only have an email, or they may only have a cell phone, or they might figure out who exactly you are. But largely, everyone, and you don't have to necessarily be, you don't have to be born here, you don't have to be documented. There's a whole lot of reasons why virtually everyone, and even the unhoused tend to have, in America, tend to have cell phones. So there really is everyone, very inclusive. So we take that data and reach out broadly with the goal of having 400 surveys and both matching the census data, the demographics, both demographically and geographically in the city to make sure we're inclusive and representative. And so that's where the data comes from. As far as response rate in Stanton, I'm not looking at it directly, but I believe we tend to have in Orange County a 27% response rate. I believe we achieved something a little bit greater than that.
Okay, so you're saying that you probably sent out close to 2,000 surveys and about 400 responded.
To be clear, of 2,000 people who were qualified to take the survey that were contacted, we had about a 27-28% response. Yes, but there is certainly wrong numbers, bad emails, a kid that answers the phone, someone who spoke, let's say, a language that weren't accommodated. Pretty hard. So there's rationale where that number could have been bigger, but yes.
And how confident are you that this data that's presented is representative of the general population?
I'm very confident. And so all those measures that we go through, both in acquiring the data and then in the data collection process, checking to make sure things like no one IP address in the online environment that answers 20 surveys, all kinds of different protocols that we have to make sure this is represented. I'm highly confident.
There's one data point that makes me feel like perhaps the responses may be a bit skewed. If you go to the
second to last slide.
The one where you talk about the demographic. Oh, that one. Yeah. It says household type.
Yes.
When it says owned, it's 77%, and rent is 20%.
Yes.
If you look at the actual census data as well as the SCAG data for Stanton, over 50% of our residents are renters.
Okay.
So this data point alone already shows me that this is heavily skewed towards homeowners. Did you consider that when you were collecting data?
So the answer to that is people are self-reporting their answers to this, and I'll give you a couple reasons why that data point might be a little bit different than to guess. So I'm a 22-year-old living in a house that I don't own. So while you might demographically consider me a homeowner or kind of a part of that home unit, I'm not considering myself a homeowner, so I have some other situation. But the answer is if there's any part of this data that the city feels, wait a second, we didn't quite get that right, then there's the opportunity for us to go back and do some more work. We have plenty of opportunity to do that from a budget standpoint and from a, any other standpoint. If something you don't think is right here, it isn't quite representative, we can absolutely go back and make some, get some additional data. This is based on what we believe is accurate, and census data might bear that out, maybe some changes to those numbers based upon the scenario I just said. Something you're concerned about?
Yeah, I am deeply concerned because I do feel that the renting population, despite the fact that a big number said housing affordability was a priority, I still feel like there's a big chunk of the population that's not being accounted for because only 20% are reporting rent, and I feel that over 50% of our population is renting. How do we get those voices heard as well? Additionally, in your open-ended question during the survey, 5% chose other. Can you elaborate on what sort of responses we got for folks?
Sure. So in the This is the presentation and the report on results. There is, it's a 7 or 8 document, which has data in all kinds of different ways to look at, some useful, some less useful. One of the things we have in there is all the open-ended responses with a overlay of their kind of demographic experience. So you'll see the actual words people used. What we presented in that first slide there was a categorization of that. You get to read the actual words people said and kind of make your own kind of assessment of it. One thing I'd caution is when you read through that, when one person says something, you know, terribly dramatic or interesting or creative, that's just one person. Yeah, you get to read all of those.
How do we get a copy of that several hundred page report?
I believe we delivered to staff. I think it's may have kept it in draft format, but it'll certainly be finalized after.
Okay, great. One thing I wanted to ask you about is when they say for economic stability, hiring and retaining staff.
Yes.
Does that refer to city staff, or does that refer to staff in their business?
No, not necessarily in business. I think they're referring to small businesses. Yes, about small businesses. So I think they have concern over their ability to hire, their ability to pay them, and they are compassionate towards small business in general. So as I said, I think it's a policy challenge to figure out how to. I mean, although they do support grants, so if they want to support small business and you have the ability to give grants, then I think you're going to accomplish that goal.
And is that something that in other cities you've seen as a challenge as well? And if so, how have they addressed it?
I don't think other cities have actually asked that kind of a question. They've asked whether they support grants, and obviously grants have been a part of policy decisions. But no, I don't think we've ever asked that quite way. I think insight and wanted to get a real picture and
discover. Great, thank you so much.
Thank you for all your work. It looks pretty impressive on the numbers, but I do agree with Alice. Our renting population is large. I would say it's over 50%.
It is over.
The houses, because a lot of people rent houses. We didn't see that much.
I think we've got to look at that survey and perhaps get more data. Sorry.
I also think that a lot of people, you know, you've got a kid at home and do you own your house and the kid's going to say yes.
Then the data skewed even more than what's showing.
That's what I'm saying. There's a lot of ways to skew data.
What if they're in a motel room? Do they own the motel room?
No. So you say that we only got a 28% response, right?
Pretty high.
Okay, well, I'm just saying, that's when I say only out of 100, we got 28, right? So that means we got 72 non-response, right?
Sure, you want to look at it that way?
Okay, I am. So let me throw this at you. I think the reason to your question is the fact that the people that complain have a financial interest in this city. And those are people that own property. And those are the people that usually have concerns and complaints over those people that live in apartments and rent to where their lives are controlled pretty much by a landlord who complains for them. I would say that in order for us to get that information, I think it's going to be rather difficult in how we go about it, because the people that are going to call in, your 28%, and the reason why a majority of them are property owners, is again because they have that vested interest financially in this community. I think it's also important that you understand that the complaint-wise, I bet you if you took a look at the number of people that are complaining and whether they're property owners or not, I think you would find that is most of this. So it's really tough sometimes, especially if you look at what they're asking for. All of those are types of things that people that are single family owners or single family detached homes own, with all those different type parks and programs, people that are stationary and not migratory, you know, that just or don't just use this as a place to live in the evening. So am I wrong?
The only thing I'll say is survey was representative based on every demographic and geographic realm. So I do not believe that we missed people who wanted to not complain or complain. I think we got a representative sample of the city. But the point is, if we want to do some renter-specific research or specific research among any demographic, that's very possible.
Yeah, not too concerned about the renter or not to rent, only because when you look at your slide that dictates household income, it's not bottom-heavy. You know, 80% of the people who responded were $150,000 or greater, I'd be concerned about that. But it's a sprinkle all the way across, so.
It's Orange County.
Correct.
I was I read the whole thing and I really enjoyed it, reading it. I published it. It was well received in the community, the people that I sent it out to, and I think it's a good start. Yes, go ahead, Gary.
How many council members got a survey?
I got one.
My mom got one too.
Okay. So,
did you get one?
No, missed you guys. Sorry.
I did not.
I got it and said everything was wonderful.
Are you resident?
No, good stuff. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you. Great.
Good. Say hello to your brother. Thank you.
All right. Want to comment
out? Yeah, any other questions or follow-up at this point? Would you like us to conduct some focus group, runner, any other demographics?
Especially if they're over 50. I'm curious to see what it is that they are concerned about.
Well, I think we know that everybody's concerned about homelessness.
Yeah, that's
yeah. I'm sure it'll just amplify what we already know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a real tough figure that out.
Mm-hmm. Great. That's it. Yeah.
All right. So at this time, we're going to adjourn our.
We will have to adjourn at 6 p.m. 6 p.m. start time. So
we can adjourn this, and then we'll open the other one to 6. Yeah, that's what I was going to do. Okay, we're going to adjourn our special and come back at 6 for our closed session.
Study session is adjourned at 5:37 p.m.
Back to.
The session was called to order at 6 p.m.
Like MacArthur said, we shall return.
All members are in attendance. Proceeded into closed session to speak regarding public performance evaluation of the Chief of Police and City Manager. City Council proceeded to closed session at 6:01 p.m. Vector control.
Hello, sir.
Oh, I didn't bring my
water. Oh, so good, right?
I didn't bring my water.
There's a half open bottle right there. Is that yours?
Oh, yeah. Maybe I did bring my water.
Oh, how could that have?
I must have brought my water.
There you go.
This computer, it's got an eye, so it.
Oh, there's a time.
And I spent so much time looking. I'm so impressed with it.
Have you ever tried to talk with your mouth full of green sea salt?
One phone call and one email.
It's not good.
No, this 75th anniversary.
Did you already break your lip? Chocolate?
No, I gave it to you. I gave it up for Lent. Thank you. At this time, I'm going to call to order the Stanton City Council. The successor agency, the Housing Authority Joint Regular Meeting of 6:30. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Mayor, Council Agency Authority Member Taylor?
Here.
Council Agency Authority Member Van?
Here.
Council Agency Authority Member Warren?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chairman Ramirez?
Here.
Mayor Chairman Shaver?
Here. If you'll all please rise for the pledge. Okay, Jennifer, tonight's your night.
United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we're at number 11, which are special presentations and awards. This is going to be a presentation by the Orange County Mosquito and Vector Control District, who are going to be sharing their mission with the City Council and providing information in their current operations. And of course, Councilmember Taylor is our representative on this committee.
I thank you, Mayor, and City Council members for the opportunities. Going to take this off so I'm not as muffled. And I'm just briefly going to talk about mosquitoes more today because we're entering into mosquito season. We actually just issued our press release this morning about our first West Nile virus positive. It wasn't in Stanton, it was in Fullerton, but it is early, so we anticipate it's going to be a busy mosquito and mosquito disease season this year. Just a little bit about our district. If you didn't know, we are a special district that provides service to all 34 cities in the county, as well as the unincorporated areas. We have a 35-member board with one city representative and then one county at large, and we have approximately about a $16.1 million budget. But first, I'd like to start off with what is a vector, because that's the most common question we get. What do we actually do? So we control, and a vector is really defined as any insect or animal or person that can cause, transmit disease or cause harm to anybody. So it's a really wide spectrum. Anything can be a vector. Our board has limited our scope of work to mosquitoes, red imported fire ants, rats, field flies, and then we do surveillance for fleas and ticks. So today I'm gonna focus on four types of mosquitoes and really breaking that down into the three on the far end that are the Aedes aegypti, Aedes albopictus, and Aedes nondescriptus. I don't expect anybody to know all those three. We just call them our invasive Aedes. You don't have to ID them. If you see them, just kill them. So what I like to always start off with is talking about what has changed in the last few years, and this is the most common question we get. When I first started the district, we always get the comment, we don't have mosquitoes in Orange County. I responded with, you're welcome. And now people say, why do we have so many mosquitoes? And that's because we had the introduction of our Aedes invasive mosquitoes in 2015. They're very aggressive day-biting mosquitoes. They prefer to bite people, where our native mosquitoes prefer to bite birds and we're sort of incidental hosts. They also breed more prolifically in backyards. They prefer small containers, making them more challenging for us to control because there are over 3.2 million residents and they all love their potted plants in Orange County. And they can have their eggs viable for years, so they don't necessarily need water to survive, where our traditional mosquitoes need water to start their life cycle. So it's important to note that as an agency, we do practice integrated vector management, and that's education, outreach, and source reduction primarily. The best way to limit mosquito production is to reduce water usage. Especially in drought years, we really shouldn't have any water runoff, we shouldn't have excess watering, so we should have less water in the community, but we tend to see more mosquitoes in drought years because people water and landscape more and therefore filling up containers. The next step is mosquito surveillance, so finding out where the mosquitoes are and where the disease are. We are predominantly a public health agency. Our goal is to limit the public health risk of mosquitoes. And then doing control. Control is really the last step if source reduction doesn't work, and that includes biological control, which is using mosquito fish, and then advancing to the chemical control, which is targeting them in their larval stage and or in their adult stage if we need to. Just some numbers for you guys. You're actually one of the outliers. We've seen an increase in requests for mosquito service requests throughout the years from 2019 to 2020 to 2021. For some reason, the city of Stanton, when I pulled your numbers, you've seen a decrease. So maybe you guys are doing a really good job at source reduction and not getting bitten. Great. These mosquitoes, the newer mosquitoes, are slightly different. They're smaller, so people don't see them. They're low flying, that's why they bite on the lower legs and ankles. And people have more severe reactions, so they'll tend to have welts and really itchy bites for days. Those dots on that container are actually the eggs of the mosquito that's laid on a container. It was dry. At some point, there was water around that container, and that's how the mosquito knew to lay those eggs. So they're about little pencil marks, if you look at that, very hard to find. So like I mentioned, this new mosquito can lay its eggs in dry conditions. We've actually observed their eggs being viable for up to 3 years. And then once water appears, they complete their life cycle and they can turn into an adult in up to 5 days in hot weather, typically about 1 week to a week and a half in our temperate climate though. So this is how the mosquitoes have spread since 2015. We saw, we identified some areas, and then in 2017 we saw a slight increase, 2018 a more significant one, in 2019 and 2020 it covered most of North Orange County. They're identified in all 34 cities now as of 2021, and we anticipate that they're going to become more acclimated and more population increases as they continue to breed in those conditions. Really the challenge for us in controlling for these mosquitoes is they do prefer these small sources, and we do not have the staffing and resources to go into every home every week to check and identify these sources. We rely on community outreach. We rely on residents' proactiveness in maintaining their property and talking to their neighbors. And really, we're looking at new innovative technologies on how to control these mosquitoes, because our traditional technology is not going to work. And that's where we get to SIT, which is sterile insect technique. Now, sterile insect technique has been used for over 60 years. The MedFly program that is very active in Orange County uses irradiation as a method of control for med flies. This into mosquito control is a newer innovation. But what sterile insect is basically sterilizing the male mosquitoes and then releasing them to mate with the females. But don't worry, males don't bite. So when we release them, you're not going to see more biting pressure, but you will see more mosquitoes in the community. And what this does is over time it declines the population, because as they mate, their offsprings are no longer viable. So there are three methods of sterile insect technique. Wabaki is the first one, and it's a bacteria that's injected into the mosquito. It is naturally occurring in other insects, but not in this mosquito. And therefore, once the male mosquito mates with the female mosquito, their eggs are no longer viable. Irradiation is X-raying the mosquito while still making them competitive in the wild, so attractive to our wild females, and then releasing them, then their eggs are not viable. And then genetically modified mosquitoes are another technique where they have a self-limiting gene that disrupts the offspring process. Currently, the only method that is available for use in California generally is irradiation. The other two methods are in trials and are not approved for general use. So it's important to note when we're talking about SIT and this new technology that you're gonna hear more about, male mosquitoes don't bite. It's really essential we get that message out to our residents. Again, I don't expect the general resident to know if it's a female or a male mosquito. I go with the general, if you see it, kill it. It won't really impact our programs. But it will eliminate and reduce the populations over time. What it will not do is eliminate the use of our chemical control and our other programs, because this is only going to target one specific species of mosquitoes. It's also going to be an ongoing process. So this is not a one and done. This will be a yearly ongoing process as we expand throughout the county. This is gonna start as a small area. And when I talk small, it's gonna be about 300 meters, so a quarter of a square mile. And then it's going to expand into other communities as we become more familiar with the technology and able to build out our concentric circles into this program. So right now our board currently approved a small program for SIT, so we're getting our infrastructure in place to a 2023 release. It does take time. We have to build up our male colonies, so we have to actually raise some mosquito babies and then separate the males and then irradiate them and make sure that they are viable. So we will be doing this, and like I mentioned, it's a quarter square mile. We have not identified the specific area, but once we do, we'll work with the city. I can tell you it'll most likely be North Orange County that has the most disease prevalence and the most mosquito counts up there. And then the challenges are we are working with insects, so we really don't know what they're going to do over time. We do have to produce a colony of mosquitoes. We do have people that raise mosquitoes. That's their job. And then we have to make sure our residents are aware of what we're doing and what the project is, as well as what our plans for this new technology are. We want to set expectations so people don't think this is the end-all, be-all, and we're going to solve the problem overnight. but we want people to be aware that we are working on new technologies that are going to address these issues. And then we have to find ways to disseminate these sterilized insects in a most cost-efficient manner and really evaluate what the costs of this type of programs are and what those taxpayers are willing to bear the burden of. So that's what we're looking at for new technologies. I mean, we're utilizing drone technology and other wide area, but this is really what's been on everybody's topic the last couple of years as invasive Aedes have impacted the quality of life for Orange County residents. With that, I'm available for any questions if you have. Otherwise, Council Member Taylor has all my information and I'm happy to answer at any other point.
Great, Alice.
Ballpark on how much it would cost? Number. How much does it cost? Do you know if there's any grants or anything available to cover it?
Currently, there's no grants that we have found available, and really it's an economy of scale. So currently we're working with Greater Los Angeles Vector Control District, the cost splitting. For us right now with the project, really just infrastructure and staffing costs because we're doing it all in-house. There are companies that provide this, and this is the challenge. We really haven't gotten nailed down the costs with them. They've just said, commit to the program and we'll come out and do it for you. And it's not really a public sector way to work.
So of your $60 million budget, you don't even have like $1 million, $2 million, or you don't even know?
This pilot project is included in our budget, but it's important to know out of our $60 million budget, a majority of that is our workforce because we have inspectors in your city every day of every business day. So we have about 34 inspectors that work either in large areas and flood channels, wetlands, doing gutter programs, or just doing resident services.
Are we going, since COVID seems to be under control right now, are we going to do any work with the inspectors?
I don't know what's going on with COVID these days. So I can't.
But it's outside.
Yeah. So we are, and I'm sorry, we're going to do ride-alongs?
Ride-alongs.
We're starting to initiate our old programs, which is ride-alongs, to educate, our trustees and our board members, as well as we're going out to public events again. We're starting that. We're getting all our invites, so we'd love to come out and be out in any of your community events, presentations. Slowly easing back into it. Can't tell you what happens next week. Changing week to week.
Okay, great. Anyway, thank you very much for that presentation, and we really appreciate all you do keeping our community safe. And if you'll let your staff and field people know that, we see them all over the place. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, one of the things I failed to do was report out of a closed session, I believe. Did you want to do that for me?
Thank you, Mayor. Council, there's nothing to report out.
Thank you. And under special presentations, I just want to remind everybody that this is Women's History Month, and we'll be discussing that a little bit later. Okay, it's time to go to our six. You want to make that announcement,
yes,
please?
Yes, please. So at 6:45 p.m., we will now begin the public hearing for redistricting. Mayor, may I start with staff report?
Of course.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Council members. Before you this evening, we have the public hearing for consideration of revised City Council districts. Electoral boundaries as required by the California Election Code. This evening you will receive a report from staff and the city's redistricting consultant on the redistricting process and review of draft maps to redraw district boundaries. I'd like to introduce this evening Mr. Jim Priest, the city's redistricting consultant with Best Best and Krieger.
Good evening. Mayor, Honorable Council, staff, Jim Priest, Best and Krieger. We're here this evening on the fourth public hearing. Based on the council's direction, possible introduction of ordinance established. Now, so before we get too far, and let's kind of start where we've been. We're going to go over some remaining project timelines, deadlines, next steps. Although we're close to the end at this point. By way of background, District 1 and 3 under your current map elect in November 2022. District 2 and 4 will next elect in November 2022. Redistricting process, you've already had the draft map. You have had your third public hearing where you did several draft maps. We're going to get into that. And we're at and again, if the council settles on a map this evening, you can introduce the attached ordinance to the staff report reflecting that approval. Redistricting rules and goals. Again, the preeminent rules under federal law is that you maintain as equal population as possible. And again, you've had that discussion before about plus or minus 10% deviation or allows. And that still keeps complying with the FIVRA, Federal Voting Rights Act, no racial gerrymandering, go out of your way to draw very strange boundaries for racial demographic. We then tier down to the California Fair Maps Act and the California Voting Rights Act that require that districts be geographically contiguous, meaning that they naturally connect, they're not separated by distances. As we'll go over in a minute, that was an issue with the current map, was so maps tend to address that. Keeping neighborhoods and communities together, keeping the map easily identifiable, and then geographically compact. Basically, boxes, blocks, squares, not cans of worms or starfish. That's the analogy I always use for geographic. And then other traditional principles that can be considered once you've met the federal and state criteria there, minimizing the number of voters in different election years. And as indicated in the staff report, that is a relevant consideration with different maps here, because it is going to shift when some of your voters will vote now. Respecting voter choices, continuity of office, future population growth, preserving the core of the So this is the current map of Stanton. Again, as I mentioned earlier, there are some continuity issues with District 3 over there on the west side, some also up there in 4 and in 2 as well. And draft maps that have been presented to the council so far, and that we'll discuss, I'd address those. When looking at the district, we overlaid that with the 2020 census data. That's the first step you do in any district. Check it against the most current census data and determine whether you're still within that 10% deviation or not. If you are, you're lucky. You can keep your existing map. You don't have to do anything. However, when we did the demographic analysis of your current district boundary, we found that the deviation was 15%. That exceeds the limit of presence. That necessitates an adjustment. And just for the benefit of the public, the way you calculate deviation is you take the lowest low, the highest high, and you calculate that spread. So in this case, District 2 is your lowest low at 6.74% under perfectly equal population. And then District 3 is over by the low, at 8.15% above perfectly equal population. In this case, about 547 ideal And so we've got this larger than permissible deviation boundary adjustment. I just said that. So far the city council has considered a number of draft map options. This is draft map option A. Gets the deviation down 2.57. So that maintains population balance under federal law. It otherwise complies with the requirements. So again, you have a lower deviation. It corrects the non-contiguity issues in District 1, 3, 4. I also know that there were concerns raised by the council about maintaining Cross Point Village. They as communities of interest. Again, next to population balance, keeping communities of interest is one of the main factors. So map option A does take care of that. The one downside of map option A is that it is going to move about 4,300 people from voting. Council then considered map option and that has a 5.75% deviation, still perfectly acceptable under federal law there. And again, deals with the contiguity issues with those regional districts, Cross Point Village and family resources together. It resembles the current map with respect to District 4 east of Beach Boulevard. So that's one of the main. And it also reduces the number of people that are going to get shifted for elections, about 3,300. So there's less people getting shifted. And then we had map option C, which was submitted by a member of the public. It's an outline of map option C. It has a total deviation of 8.48, so again, that's within bounds under the Federal Voting Rights Act. Also addresses the continuity issues. So all three of those maps are population balanced under the law. They address the continuity issues. The third bullet point here about being limited in the Janeway, Pine Tree Way distribution, we're going to get to that in a second because there's going to be a map option C version 2, which you're going to see in a minute, which addresses that in balance. And again, occurs about 4,700 people voting in 2020. All of these map options have a certain number of people who are being heard to elect at a time. We have map option D. This was also a public submitted map. Deviation is acceptable at 2.74%. However, it makes a lot of change. Reconfigured a great deal of all four of the districts. Defers about 7,200 from the 2022 to 2024. So there's more significant control there. It maintains compact, contiguous districts, so it meets that element. However, one of the concerns is that it doesn't preserve the core of existing districts. And it makes a lot of moves. And our understanding is that map option. But again, it's brought back to you for consideration. And we have map options. This is a third publicly submitted map. We didn't get too far on this one because the deviation is just excessive. So that's just not going to have a mustard. Also, it split multiple census blocks. That is a disfavored practice, not per se illegal, but the Census Bureau has mapped, and they say this block in this spot has 6,000 people. If you were to just manually split that block halfway, how do you know that 3,000 are on the north side and 3,000 on the south side? So the more you split census blocks, the more you end up engaging in certain guesswork on exactly what kind of population you're looking at there. So again, it's a discouraged practice. You're going to hear later tonight on map options two that staff is proposing very slight census block split, but it shouldn't have any significant effect. So now we had those five maps, two submitted by the demographer originally and three from the public. And now we have the demographer took a crack at map option C. We understand that that was going in the direction of the council's preference. So, consultant took a crack at this one to see if they could address a few of the remaining concerns about map option C. Total deviation 9.49%, so again, that's in the bounds under federal law. It defers about 4,800 residents from 2023 to 2024. So relative to all the maps, it's moving a decent amount of people, but it's not the most, it's not the least. It's kind of in the middle. Compact configuration. Serves the core of existing districts. Also keeps the community interest between that Janeway and Pine Tree Way north of Lawrence. And I'll show you. There we go. The Janeway area. If the council would like, we could certainly bring up the Google map for a more interactive discussion.
I can't see that. Can you see that?
Yeah, it would be that there's.
I'll go ahead and bring up the Google map.
Want to bring it up? Okay. So this is overlaying map option C with map option C version. And there's only one change you'll see. So that's map option it is population balance, and it does otherwise meet the legal requirements. I will mention one other concern that was expressed previously, and it doesn't reflect on this map, but staff will take care of this if this is the council's direction. There is a toe right here that kind of stretches in between this area.
Can you say a colon?
That area is in the census tract, so when it was drafted, sometimes the census tracts look odd. However, what we could do is we could manually split it right there. Again, normally that's a disfavored practice because, again, like guesswork with how many people live in where you stop. But I understand that this is all railroad right of way. And because trains don't vote, we would be able to manually split that and clean up that triangle of. So this would become part of the next district. That would just make the map a little bit, you know, geographically cleaner.
For both, yeah.
Got a mind of its own. So that's another suggestion that staff will be offering, is just to square off that triangle. And again, while it does require splitting the census block, this one's kind of a no harm, no foul. This is not really using it. So, we're going to have to be up health care. So, that's map C version. That's shown again. This was the demographer's attempt to wrap up some of those other issues that were raised with regard to the property. So, again, we're at the fourth public hearing this evening. We asked the council to review the maps, take any public input and comment that is offered this evening, factor into the decision. And then if you decide that you're settled on a map this evening, you're free to introduce the ordinance that's attached to the staff report. And if you introduce it, staff will bring it back at a future adoption. Legal deadline is April 17th. And this is the timeline in a nutshell. And April 17th, we are here right now at March 8th. So, again, if the council is ready to commit to a map this evening, we can proceed. If the council would like to have more information, we can always talk to the photographer, generate maps, other options. Of course, we'll have to have another meeting for that. That's pretty much it. So, I'm happy to answer any questions.
So we actually have almost a month to continue any review or input. Is that correct?
You have till April 17th.
Yeah.
Got about a little under a month.
Did we get a copy of the 2C amended?
It should be attached. Yeah.
Correct. It was attached to your staff report.
Okay. It was buried in there.
Yeah.
And then your email was attached separately, just so that.
Okay, any other questions at this time before I open the public hearing? Okay. Okay, I'm going to open the public hearing on this item. Is there anyone in the public that would like to address the council on this item?
Council?
Pull that microphone down to you just a little bit. State your name for the record, please.
My name is John Warren.
Thank you, sir.
I am and all regarding the cap, aspirationally hoping that did at the time, but since the boxes getting a variance from C vote. But otherwise, my goal in setting out with designing that map was to create as many neighborhoods that were not split. Previous issues we've seen in the past, west corner where residents were split apartment buildings and they lived homes and they thought there was something up with that, or Cross Point split. And so my goal in setting out and designing the map is to practically have it combines things such as having the downtown together. That was pretty much my goal, is just trying not to split at all. There's some side benefits with the variance being high that District 4 is practically unchangeable with keeping the so District 4 pretty much has the same, it's a negative, you know, negative 500 population, but otherwise it's just trying to keep everything together. But house, so should build. Again, a lot of fun. As complicated or as not complicated as may be, yep, shape.
Is there anyone else from the audience that would like to speak on this item? Okay, if not, I'll bring it back to the council and close the public hearing. Go ahead, Yuri, we'll start with you if you have any questions or comments.
I'd like to see the maps again.
Okay, you wanted to bring them up one at a time slowly, and can you kind of make them so we can see them? Thank you. For old blind people.
I don't like to see maps. Map I can overlay.
Map.
Great idea.
That's map option. Overlay the you see it does move quite a bit around, but the attention is again a fair amount of shifting, but ultimately that does get you more. Pick out A. If E moves around less than A, but still does make.
again, it makes changes, but option C, make some shifts, but less so, it kind of a little less each time. Again, option C, I know Mr. Warren mentioned that was please take off the existing districts. Let's just overlay C. Only significant change they made to the neighborhood. Again, not reflected on the map, and we would suggest just slicing that little off of the triangle up there.
Can I ask you a quick question? I appreciate the fact that we're doing contiguous neighborhoods, right? Now, let's just take any district anywhere in the country. And let's say one neighborhood in that district is pretty good sized. So is it possible then that that neighborhood could get somebody elected because it was a large portion of a district, one neighborhood, and the person that elected then would feel responsible for just that neighborhood, and it would not be sometimes fair to the rest of the district? Have you ever thought, I understand that's one of the shortcomings I visualize of having a larger neighborhood, giving the opportunity to vote within a district to where they can control that. And to me, that seems kind of contrary to what we've been trying to do with this.
You know, there are arguments on both sides of this, on what's the best way to district, what's the best way to district. Is it possible that one particular neighborhood in the district could end up effectively controlling that district? It, hard to predict. I don't know all of your specific I guess it's possible. It's also possible that it would empower other people within the district to also vote and be able to elect the officer of their election. That's ultimately what comes down to the problem, right? In fact, why cities are required in the district in the first place. It's possible. Depends on the circumstance.
Yeah, well, this wouldn't happen in a larger city. This problem could arise because we're a smaller city. And the real problem is that I think these types of problems are maybe associated with cities our size compared, like I said, bigger. But it's another reason why this whole thing is very difficult. And I think it's stupid for the city of Stanton not to allow every resident to vote for who they want to represent them when you only have 1.5 square miles of residents. And trying to divide up 1.5 square miles of residents fairly to where there's equity, I think we're doing more harm than if we would have just had citywide elections the way we've always had them and rotate the mayor.
Well, there's policy arguments for and against the California Voting Rights Act. Arguments in favor are that it empowers minority communities, it empowers local communities to elect their candidates of their choice in elections. That's the avowed purpose of the CDRA. On the other hand, there is a counter argument, especially in smaller cities, that may end up kind of balkanizing the city. I've heard that counter argument as well. At the end of the day, the California Voting Rights Act is the law of the state, and because of that, transitioning over to buy district elections and find themselves now at this point in order to adjust federal or a two-tiered system. So I hear you. I understand the arguments. At the end of the day, I think the state has made the policy that this is the direction.
Gary, I'm going to jump ahead of you.
I might.
District 1, that shoehorn that we're pointing at right there. If we were to ask to eliminate that, could we still vote on that map by making that one little change?
You're talking about just taking the railroad right away out?
Correct.
You have to show the public.
Yeah. We could. Okay.
Which one is this, Riga?
Version 2, map C.
CV2.
CV2. Essentially, I'm asking, I would be okay if we just took up that that little husk, or we won't call it that horseshoe, and then I'd be comfortable with that as is. But that's just my take.
I could live with it.
Okay.
I do like the best.
Okay.
Can you put them up one at a time so we can get a good look at each one?
Currently CV2 standalone.
Correct.
Yes.
Let's not even look at C. Let's just use this one as the C representative. So A, B, and then version 2C.
If we, quick legal question. If we change a map and we don't, and we vote on it before the public gets a chance to see it, where are we?
If the council were to make a significant change to the map, or suggest that we make a significant map, the Fair Maps Act requires you to publish, or I'm sorry, post on your website the maps that would be under consideration. These maps are all posted this evening. Staff is comfortable with just moving that one toe this evening, because again, it's not affecting population, only railroad right of. Clearly, if we were making a significant change in some way, alter a neighborhood, alter a boundary in some way, then yeah, we would be coming back for a vote. And staff is comfortable with just removing that.
Could you put up A, B, and C then, really, and let us take a quick look at them individually?
I don't think I'm in control.
So here's map A. Standalone, no other overlays. Mr. Schrauber, just let me know, or council.
So has a railroad right-of-way been removed on this one, or what?
Right, it's right here.
Mm-hmm. And that's A, right? Okay, thank you.
And that would be staff suggestion to make that triangle.
To be?
Yes. I think that one looks fine. Okay, tell me why it doesn't work.
Again, we see if we need to add it or clean up the boot to make it in the
drive. So that's pretty close to, I mean, it's like flashcards. It's kind of close to A, isn't this?
Why don't we overlay A?
Yeah, I think it looks pretty close.
I'm in strong favor of Mr. John Warren's map, and the reason is, if you look at map option A, the biggest problem I see is the fact that the neighborhood around the Family Resource Center is split, even though in your comments you say it's not, it is, because I consider that neighborhood north of Chapman and west of Peach, and you'll see that it's split between districts and north. It's split, you're having one street. And I've walked those areas, and I know that people get very confused. And, their neighbor has a different representative than they do. And I think if we can leave the boundary at Chapman, where it's a major street, so I think option A does not preserve the Family Resource Center. So that I would automatically disqualify. But go on to option B, please. The reason why option B I would consider not great is because if you look at the southwest of Western and Cerritos, and if you zoom in, there's a small street called Asbury Avenue, and that is split between three different districts. And imagine living on Asbury Avenue. And, you know, to the north of you is District 1, to the south of you is District 3, and to the east of you is District 3. I mean, 2. That's extremely confusing. And I actually, that is part of my district. And I know the residents there. Even I have a hard time.
How many residents actually live in that split of 3?
Oh, you'd be surprised. I'll show you the number of houses. It's right here on Google Maps. It they're all single-family homes. With a couple
10,
of
20, 100? What is it?
I'd say a few dozen. On that big street, and in that corner, like I said, it's the southwest corner of West.
I see it.
Cerritos. You can zoom in, and you'll see that it's a nice neighborhood.
Okay. Zoom in. You can also satellite.
Yeah. If you drag the map down, that's where I walked. And it's confusing for me as a council member to realize that. Oh, that person's not my voter. I gotta skip to that next house. So I think if a council member who studies maps all the time doesn't get it, how are the residents going to get it? So I am not a big fan of option B, even though they do keep the Family Resource Center together, they do keep Cross the Village together. I think that we can do better. And so that's why I'm an advocate of maps B2. So if you don't mind on the C2, we can see that all the problems that we had mentioned are solved. It's very clear lines, right, the northwest corner. Right, south of the railroad tracks is District 3. East of Western is District 2. And then District 4 is reserved as well. So I think this is a great map. Mr. Ramirez says, we can easily take care of that little toe. And it wouldn't affect anybody because nobody lives there. And then the map would look beautiful. So I'm a strong advocate of that. I know that John spent many, many hours making this map work, and I appreciate his efforts for that. And I hope the rest of the council.
Make a motion. I'll second it.
All right, I make the motion. But I do want to hear from you guys first.
Okay.
I back up Alice.
And your son.
Nepotism. Nepotism.
Experiencing all the hours on that and why everything. It's the simplest map, and that's what this is supposed to be. You know, we're not supposed to make everything more convoluted than it already is. And so this map, it's simple. You know, each district is in, takes up an area. There's nobody stretching into somebody else's district. So to me, it's the most logical map for us.
I can live with it.
It's a 9.82% deviation.
You're talking just a dozen people.
9.1.
Okay, so there's a lot of future development in the bottom zone district there. Is that going to put us in the, is that going to skew that at all, do you think?
Not now, because you take the population and have it.
No, I know. I was just thinking of the future. That's
10 years, possible.
In 10 years, and then you may have to.
How about that's 3 when we get those two buildings in?
Census is
every 10
years. District 4 is underpopulated right now.
That's true. As a Councilmember Bandon, District 4 has room.
Yes.
It's your lowest low. It's your lowest outlaw.
Correct.
Right.
Okay,
so we should name this, when we vote on it, we should name it the Warren District. Okay. And that way, if it doesn't work out, John, we can blame it all on you. Okay, so we have a motion and we have a second. Is there any other discussion? Okay, I'll call for the question. Oh yeah, I did close the public hearing. Okay, take roll, Madam Clerk.
I'm sorry. To be clear, we're going with
yes. So with that little toe.
Perfect.
Yeah, we have a motion by Councilmember Van, a second by Councilmember Taylor to move forward with map CV2. Minus the small boot, which we're allowed to do because there's said trans cannot vote, and that final map will be reflected in that change. We typically do all recommended actions item 1 through 5. So this evening we are declaring this action not subject to CEQA.
received the report from staff. We conducted a public hearing. We're introducing the ordinance with the inclusion of the approval of map CV2 with the removal of the booth. And we will set the ordinance for second reading and approval at the March 22nd, 2022 regularly scheduled city council meeting. And again, we have a motion by council member Van, a second by council member Taylor. I will now proceed with the roll call vote. Council member Taylor?
Yes.
Council member Warren?
Yes.
Council member Van?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez?
Yes.
And Mayor Shaver?
Yes.
Thank you.
It passes 5-0.
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll move on to our consent calendar. All items on the consent calendar may be acted upon simultaneously.
Thank you, Mr. Priest.
Oh, by the way, thank you very much for the report. We appreciate all your work.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Mr. Warren, for all your work. Okay. I would like to pull item 12H. I and J. Is there anybody else, anything for discussion? Okay, I move the balance.
Second.
I'll second.
Okay, roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mayor, with the removal of item 12H, 12I, and 12J, we move the balance by Mayor Shaver, who's second by Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez. I will now proceed with the roll call vote. Council Member Taylor?
Yes.
Council Member Warren?
Yes.
Council Member Van?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez?
Yes.
And Mayor Shaver?
Thank you. On item 12H, is that Mr. Ames? Mr. Ames, just a quick question. It really doesn't refer to 12H, just sort of a general question. I thought it'd be a good time to ask. We're looking at about 8.2% contingency on this one, it seems, which is under a normal 10%. It's probably a little bit higher because at this point we don't know about the cost of certain materials and things like that. But what I did want to ask you is, who keeps track of our change orders?
Mr. Mayor, in terms of cost or in terms of scope?
Submitted by the contractor or the people that we contract with.
I would, along with the assistance of our Director of Finance.
Okay, so yeah, I wonder if, a lot of times when change orders come in, your department handles all those for all types of construction or things that are going on in the city, right?
Yes, sir.
Is there any way that maybe we could get some idea of how that's going at some point? Do you think that necessitates itself, or do you think that's so minimal? Have you found it to be very minimal? Are we usually under our 10% cap?
Mr. Mayor, I have not been here long enough to actually go through enough construction contracts to know what the history has been on some of these. Yeah,
that's kind of why I'm asking, because in the past we've never, the council, we always say, yeah, you can have this contingency or you can have several thousand dollars more. Sure. But we don't really take a look at that. That's really, I think fiduciary, we have people that do that. But I think the council also, that's something that would be good, especially if it's a large amount of money. We're talking about, going from $33,000 to $40,000. Go ahead, please.
I was just going to comment that in the 2 years I've been here, we have not processed very many change orders to purchase orders in the finance department. So typically when a department gets city council approval for a contract, let's say the original contract is $80,000, and then there's a X amount of dollars that the council approves for the city manager to approve change orders up to X amount of dollars. The department will request a change order for the base contract of $80,000, and then finance will process change orders to that purchase order up into the maximum contract amount, regardless of if it crosses one fiscal year, two fiscal years, or five, as long as the total cumulative amount of the contract doesn't exceed the amount the city council approves plus the change order. And like I said, in the 2+ years I've been here, there's been very few change orders in total. And it never exceeds, in the 2 years, it's never exceeded the maximum amount the council has approved. Because if I get a change order, and I can't recall a situation where the amount exceeded the total authorized amount by the contract, I have kicked it back, or I would kick it back and say we need to go and have the council increase the maximum authorized amount from X dollars to this new amount that you're requesting your revised change order for. Does that make sense?
Yeah, in your experience, I know that it used to be around 5% of the project, but do we have some standard that you have established that you're comfortable with?
Experience at the City of San Juan Capistrano, our purchasing policy authorized 10%. 10% is typically what I do see. I know Mr. Ames comes from another Orange County city. I don't know if 10% is your standard, but I think 10% is probably the norm. It's really whatever the council is comfortable with. If the council were comfortable with a lower contingency, then, you know, the council could do that. And one of the project lists, one day, we'll be reviewing the city's purchasing policy, and if it's not already explicitly stated what the maximum change order is, that's something we could consider putting in there. Now, putting it in the purchasing policy does limit a director's ability with some flexibility. Maybe some contracts lend to a higher or a lower contingency rate, so if you explicitly put a number in there, you're kind of tying staff's hands, but we're happy to do what the city council pleases.
With inflation and the cost of materials going up, you may need to exceed a certain level. That was the reason I asked that question, because I'm finding that a lot of other agencies are having some difficulty in that.
Yeah, you do want the policies and the procedures to have some flexibility so projects can move forward at a reasonable rate and aren't stalled and halted to come back to council for smaller amounts. But I will say that we do have strong controls in finance, and we do keep these staff reports, attach them to our purchase orders, and we know how much the maximum amount is that the council does authorize.
Okay, thank you. I'll go ahead and move 12H.
Second.
Roll call, Madam Clerk.
A motion by Mayor Shaver, a second by Councilmember Taylor. I'll now proceed with roll call vote. Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Warren?
Yes.
Councilmember Van?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Member Marys?
Yes.
Mayor Shaver?
Yes.
Item 12H passes. We now move on to the next item, which is 12I.
Thank
you. Acceptance of the 2021 Citywide Traffic Signal Equipment Improvements Project by the City Council of the City of Stanton, California. That is another item for Mr. Ames.
Thank you. Mr. Ames, these are the signal controller updates for the our crossing, right? For a crossing, pedestrian crossing.
Are you're so there were two pedestrian crossings, Mr. Mayor, and those pedestrian crossings don't actually have traditional controllers.
Okay, the reason I'm asking this question is that I've seen skateboarders, where the buttons are for people, they take their skateboards and they beat them, okay? I was just curious, it looks like here you're talking about the type, the installation. I was just wondering, do we have insurance against that, and are they built to withstand that?
So any pedestrian push buttons that were installed were replaced, if they were replaced with the ADA compliant push buttons, which unfortunately no longer have the shield over it.
That's what I
think that's where you're going with this.
Yeah.
They're now the exposed button. So unfortunately, I wouldn't say that they are better built to withstand that, but they are more compliant with ADA law, so unfortunately that's the trade-off.
Okay, thank you. I see it, it's kind of not a lot, but there's some kids that do that, and it could be costly. Anyway, I'll go ahead and motion 12I.
Second.
Madam Clerk, roll call.
Mayor, we have a motion by Mayor Shaver, a second by Councilmember Taylor, and now proceed with roll call vote. Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Warren?
Yes.
Councilmember Van?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez?
Yes.
And Mayor Shaver?
Yes, thank you.
Now into item 12J, consideration of resolution number 2022-08 to restrict overnight parking on Main Street. This item is also for Mr. Ames. Mr. Shaver, your question?
Yeah, I was wondering if you could put that map up so we could definitively see what we had quite a discussion about that, and the council came back with a direction on it. I just want to make sure we're all clear on it, please.
Sounds good to me.
One moment, we'll download it.
Okay. reason I'm doing this, Mr. Ames, is I've gotten some calls from both residential and some commercial people on this item. And I know, I think if I recall, the council wanted to try to keep the residential with the ability to park overnight. And I just want to make sure we're okay there. Because in the definition here, it said, it talked about the depth of the street. And I want to make sure the language matched the map. Could you kind of walk us through it real quickly?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. So the language in the resolution is that we are prohibiting overnight parking from the alley between Flower Avenue and Beach Boulevard on the north side of Main Street, right there where the start of the red line, to Chestnut Avenue. So that red line matches that description in the resolution. And on the south side of Main Street, Flower Avenue to,
that's wrong.
Can't
that's from here.
Quartz Avenue.
Yeah. Okay.
So if, okay. Hopefully I've got that right.
Okay.
Those are all commercial.
Yeah. Okay.
That's all commercial.
And then the strike, the angular, where that's not on tonight's agenda, right?
The city council previously approved angled parking between Rose Street and Flower Avenue. And those are the blue lines on this map. I decided to add the blue lines in there for clarity.
Okay, that was the additive then, right? One of the business owners there, and the reason why I'm bringing this up, was concerned about the fact that he's found that if you have the parallel parking in the residential side rather than the commercial side, he's found that the residential side, there's been some accidents with people backing out of the angular parking, and it's cost him some money and with his insurance company. You being a traffic engineer, could you kind of address that question that he sent me in a letter I got?
So the concern is that he's worried about the residential angled parking?
Right. In other words, with all the, he was okay with the existing angular parking that they have, but if you put the angular parking more towards, I think it's Rose Street at the end, yeah, he was concerned about that being a problem with his business, which is at the residential area at the end of the street just before you get to the Summer Tree condominium complex.
Forward and angled parking has inherent risks associated with it. So one of the suggestions could be back and angled parking.
Come on, guys, back in angle parking.
But, I mean,
we get there.
I would say that since this mirrors the other angled parking in front of the businesses, I'm still not sure why adding angled parking in front of the residential units is...
I think it was a bad experience he had. I just wanted to get your opinion so that when I go back to him, I got an answer tonight. So I appreciate that very much.
My answer to that is it's no different than the existing angled parking that's out there today.
Okay, thank you. I'll go ahead and move it.
I have a quick question.
Go ahead.
So if he's concerned that angled parking, if moved down two blocks, would create more risk than where it is now, would we consider doing back in angled parking in those two blocks to prove a point that perhaps it is safer, not because it's moved down two blocks, but because it's different in the way in which angled parking is practiced?
Okay, so we have a residential area that has angular parking that we're having crashes right now. And so people that have never backed in before, I'm not sure how that would go. I tell you what, I'm willing to pass this the way it is. Let's have our traffic engineer bring it back at a future date, and we'll see where we are with it, if you're okay with that.
I do believe this is just for the overnight parking. The angle was passed at the February 22nd meeting.
Okay, we'll have time.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Dan.
Already been done. Yep.
All right, I'll go ahead and move that item then, please.
Second.
Madam Clerk, roll call.
Mr. Mayor, we have a motion by Mayor Chavez, seconded by Councilmember Taylor. I'll now proceed with the roll call vote. Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Warren?
Yes.
Councilmember Van?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez?
Yes.
And Mayor Chavez?
Yes, thank you.
Item 12J does pass.
Okay, we're now moving on to we ended our public hearings.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, that was heard out of order for our public hearing at 6:45 p.m., so we can now move to item 14, unfinished business.
All right, we have no Unfinished business, new business, item 15A, please read it.
Item, new business, item 15A, approve the budget adjustment proposed for the mid-year budget update for fiscal year 2021-2022 and approve a resolution amending the city's position classification manual and adopt the resolution amending the city's salary and benefits resolution. This item is for Ms. Bannigan.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. Tonight we are going to do a review of our fiscal year 21-22 mid-year budget. Tonight we're going to talk about where we started when we adopted this budget last June, what recommended changes we have to our revenue estimates and expenditure appropriations for the general fund, what the general fund's available fund balance was expected to be when we adopted this budget in June, and what it's now projected to be based on our revised estimates, and then significant adjustments to other funds, particularly our capital improvement program and our ARPA fund. So where were we last June? We started with the impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic not impacting our revenues in fiscal year 1920 as negatively as we expected. So we had revenue increases in our general fund. Particularly, we expected total general fund revenues to increase 3%. We expected our property tax revenue to increase 5% based on a 5% increase in assessed valuation. We expected our sales tax to increase 5%. We expected our 1% Measure GG tax to increase 8%. And we expected, even though we were knowing we weren't going to have revenue from the Tahiti Motel or Stanton Inn and Suites, we expected an 11% increase in our TOT revenue just because of our 2% increase in our TOT tax rate, getting a full fiscal year of that revenue bonus. And in our general fund expenditures, that 3% of additional general fund revenues was supposed to be able to fund a 4% increase in our general fund expenditures. And we were able to balance our general fund budget with just a slight increase of revenues being about $19,000, just shy of $19,000 over expenditures. And related to ARPA, the budget you adopted last June included about $100,850 of personnel costs for funding a portion of the assistant to city manager position with ARPA, knowing that she was the main project manager getting the project started, and four limited term recreation leaders part-time. So that is where we started, and where are we now? We're gonna start with the general fund, which is the main operating fund of the city. Overall, we have categorized our revenues in, if this will work, oh wait, there we go, in these major categories, and you will see this is showing the difference between what we adopted and what we're estimating. And you'll notice that the three categories that have the largest increases are our sales and Measure GG taxes, our property tax, and our other revenue. Our fees and permits are remaining the same. Our other revenue is, we'll talk about that, it's primarily our TOT revenue. So overall, we are recommending total general fund revenue estimates to increase by $1.6 million to $28.7 million for fiscal year 21-22. Most of the revenue adjustments are because when we estimated the original fiscal year 21-22 estimates, we did it based on an increase of the fiscal year 2021 revenues when we were here a year ago giving you our mid-year update for our fiscal year 2021 revenues. And the great news is that our fiscal year 2021 revenues exceeded that revised budget by over $1 million. So therefore, we need to increase our 21-22 revenues to true up what the actual activity happened when we closed our books last June. So here we have our history of our sales tax and Measure GG revenues. And you'll see that they're typically, since they're both one, our Measure GG is like 1% of our sales tax. It's almost the same, but you can see that in the last years, as more people are doing more online shopping and buying cars outside of Stanton, the Measure GG revenue is actually exceeding our sales tax revenue, both in the actuals in 1920 and 2021. And that is why there's a 5% increase to our sales tax estimate for 21-22, but a larger, an 8% increase in our Measure GG tax revenue. They're not exactly the same number because the city has been experiencing, we're receiving more than 100% of our sales tax revenue in Measure GG tax revenue. So HGL Inc., who is our sales tax consultant, has given us updated revenue estimates based on that. What does that mean? That means that we have increased our sales tax revenues this year by $307,000, and our Measure GG tax by $475,000 since our adopted budget. And actually, that's even lower than the number that HGL gave us, because we reduced the number that HGL gave us by $300,000 to accommodate for the payback of the economic development loan that was approved by this council a year ago for Rodeo 39, where a portion of these revenues are being used to pay down that advance. So it's even lower than what our sales tax said.
Good idea.
Our consultant said. The main drivers in the city of Stanton, I thought this was an interesting chart just to see kind of what are the biggest industry types that we get sales tax and Measure GG tax from. What's happened between September 2020 and September 2021, which is the most recent retail sales information available. This is a comparison. Oh my, I turned off the whole thing. This is a comparison of what's going on in Stanton in these industries and what's going on in Orange County as a whole. So at the bottom, retail sales activity in Stanton citywide is about 8% higher, and in the county it's 9%. And I noticed that we're slightly below the county in many of these industries. But for the city of Stanton, the main drivers for why we're getting sales tax, and everyone in this room and watching online is going to know, is a 70% increase in gas in over a year has brought more gas tax to our city, and the increase in labor due to the shortage of restaurants being able to hire people. They've had to pay way more than the minimum wage to hire people, and that has caused menu prices to increase, and so that is also giving us more revenue from our restaurants and hotel industries. As far as property tax, the city gets at least 2% assessed valuation every year from the inflation counting from the County of Orange's property tax. When we estimated our 21-22 adopted budget revenue, we guessed that assessed valuation would increase in the city by 5%, knowing that there was a lot of new residential homes that sold in calendar year 2020, because the revenue that we're receiving this fiscal year is based on properties that sold as of January 1, 2021. So what the Orange County Assessor's Office has on the property tax roll a year ago, over a year ago. So we expected 5%. 5% is actually a pretty good estimate in this economy. What actually happened was our assessed valuation increased 10%. From about $3.2 billion to $3.5 billion. And again, I'm getting confused between the pointer and the thingy. So you'll see our trend is for property tax is going steep, and that is an increase of another $443,000 in property tax revenue for this fiscal year. As far as TOT, when we estimated TOT at 11%, it was an 11% increase from fiscal year's 2021 revised estimate. But what actually happened was 2021, we received more than $100,000 more in property tax revenue in 2021 than we thought we were going to get a year ago when we came and gave you that budget update. Therefore, our TOT revenue is estimating to increase more than $100,000 in this fiscal year. And I thought this was a nice chart too, because even though we don't have a full year of Tahiti Motel or Stanton Inn and Suites in fiscal year 2021, you still see a nice steep increase between 1920's revenues and 2021's revenues. Yes, sir.
Mr. Taylor has a question.
I know when I'm like this, I'm looking at that.
Can you tell how much of the property tax increase is due to new construction and new homes?
When we do our estimate for the future, we try to put in the number of what the new development is going to be, and we try to be real conservative. I think we probably can get the number from the assessor's office. We can look to see what's available.
I'm just wondering why it increased so much.
Well, if we have to think about when I started here 2 years ago, there were, maybe Jennifer knows, which residential homes were completed and sold probably in calendar year 2021? Because Brookfield? Brookfield, which is over 300 homes.
I have a question on this slide. Why is it that the TOT decreased so drastically from 2017 to 2018 and 2019?
I will definitely get back to you and let you know in a follow-up email why that is. And I will know that when I first got here, which makes sense as I got here in the middle of fiscal year 1920, the city's TOT before the rate increase came in, the occupancy was pretty flat. So I was surprised that it was increasing even before our rate increase. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, the 1920 adopted budget, which was the last budget before I started, expected just a flat TOT revenue that year. So I will take a look and see. Get back to you.
Just one of the comments. A lot of people don't understand that for every $1 in property tax, the city gets, I believe, 3%.
It's about 14 cents.
14 cents, right. Mm-hmm. But the school districts get like almost 70%.
Correct.
So in this city, we're trying to run it on like 13% of the money. But we got $100,000. The local school district got like $1.4 million. And so if somebody ever asks you why we don't have any funding for the city, if you look at the way in which the property value is evaluated and broken up, even though we have such small areas of school, that's where all our money's going. It's not going to the city. And we're providing services on very little property tax revenue. Thank you.
Thank you. And the last revenue, just wrapping up the revenue estimates, in the other revenue category a few slides ago that showed an increase in our adopted versus mid-year update, $110,000 of that was the TOT revenues. The other two big components are $160,000 for the SB2 planning grant. We have to keep on rebudgeting that every year until we actually get the reimbursement from the state. It's a government accounting nuance. So the reimbursements are outstanding. Hopefully we do get those before we close this year's books, and then this adjustment will stop being rolled over. And then when we adopted this budget last year, we took out all of the reimbursement from the North Orange County, formerly known as the North Orange County Public Safety Task Force Program, now rebranded as a North Orange County Collaborative. And this fiscal year, we are getting $73,400 of revenue. That is 6 months of reimbursement for the assistant to city manager position. So from January 2022 through June. And then when you see the 2022-23 proposed budget in a couple months, the other $73,400 for the balance of the calendar year will be reflected in our revenue adjustments. We don't have as much exciting stuff going on the general fund expenditures. As you can see between our proposed and our revised, they're almost exactly the same. In total, general fund expenditure adjustments are $260,422, or $420, to equal $26.8 million. The biggest amounts are broken out on this slide. So $120,000 of it is related to an assessment from PIRMA, the Public Employees Risk Management Authority, the city used to be a member of prior to fiscal year 2021, I believe. And they did an assessment looking at their prior year's general liability program, and they had deficits, and they assessed each member agency that were members between fiscal years 2015-16 through fiscal year 2021, and they assessed each member an additional assessment to recover their deficits for those operating years. This is our city share, and so we are going to fund that with our additional Measure GG revenue to pay that off. Then we mentioned the North Orange County Public Safety Collaborative. So part of the collaborative is going to fund a portion of the deputy enhancement, community enhancement deputy. So that's at 118, a very specific number. So that very specific number is being taken out of the general fund and put into the special revenue fund, where the collaborative will reimburse us for that. And then we have some minor adjustments related to our contribution to the North Spa operating contribution for this fiscal year. We didn't spend all of the $100,000 appropriation we had in last year's budget. And so this is just a housekeeping item to carry over that unspent appropriation this year. We haven't been invoiced from them, so we don't know what the cost is, but we just want that in the budget. Shifting personnel costs to the general fund. When we set up our budget, we guess and estimate to the best of our ability how much staff time, particularly in the community and economic development department, is going to be spent on projects that are going to be funded directly by the developer versus the general fund. And at the mid-year, we kind of review the actual activity versus our budget. And based on that, we are shifting the costs for a couple of planners back to the general fund. And then we have $50,000 for public works maintenance contract costs. 25 of that is based on the recent RFP process done for our HVAC maintenance contract. The actual bids came in higher than the city's budget. The other $25,000 is the city engineer. Public Works Director would like to have a citywide tree trimming contract vendor and have some sort of, rather than react to diseased trees and trees that need trimming, have a more proactive tree trimming maintenance issue. And if you want more elaboration on that, I'm sure he'd be happy to tell you. Do you want to ask him any questions about the expenditure adjustments before we move on to the general fund balance? Okay. So the city's general fund balance is expected to be $23.6 million. It includes $13.1 million that the city council set aside in the reserve policy that was adopted last year. It includes things set aside for capital improvement, for emergency replacement of technology and maintenance equipment, economic uncertainty contingencies, and things of that nature. And the other $10.5 million is just unassigned, uncommitted. It's just available. So this is kind of a difference between what we adopted last June, what was amended, and what we're doing tonight. So when we adopted the budget last June, we thought our available fund balance was going to be $17.5 million by June 30th, which was 67.2% of our operating budget, very healthy. Usually best practice targets in our area, they target that number to be about 25 to 50%, and we're way over that. And you can see with our mid-year budget adjustments, we are at 88% or $23.6 million by June 30th. Just in case you're wondering how we got in the middle, because I was wondering that to do when I did that slide today, 890 of revenue came into the general fund to reimburse from the Housing Authority Fund for the purchase of 11870 Beach Boulevard. So that's what that was. So that's it for the general fund. I wanted to comment that we have other adjustments to other funds on attachment A of our staff report. The most significant one is programming the $4 million that the city received last July, and basically assigning it to the programs that the city council has already approved so that they're in our budget. and they're committed. And then the rest of it will be in the proposed 22-23 budget. Attachment D to our staff report kind of gave a snapshot of changes to the capital improvement program. Most of all of the changes to the capital improvement program impact the parks programs. It impacts unfunding certain projects that have just been kind of carrying over year to year. And based on recent meetings with Public Works and Community Services, they want to reprioritize those dollars, make them available pending the completion of the park master plan so the city council can redirect those funds based on their priorities. And then funding some additional projects. So these are the projects that have been carrying over year to year for the last two or three fiscal years with no spending being done except for the last one. And they total $612,980. The last project is Dodson Park Building Rehabilitation. That was a new project the City Council added when we adopted our budget last June. We are recommending we unfund this project because the actual cost is a lot more than this initial estimate was. And I think city staff is working with our legislators to try to find some other granting funding for that. And then once that's secured, we can bring it back to the City Council to reprogram at that time. And then we wanted to request the addition of three projects to our CIP. One is a good news story that is not new to the people in this room. It's adding the Norm Ross Sports Park project that is 100% funded by the state. It wasn't in our CIP because we were waiting to get that funding secured. Now that we have it, we want to put it in our CIP program. $60,000 to replace a shade structure at Stanson Central Park. And then we want to fund the design from a premier park renovation project. And we're only asking for design first. And then once that design is complete, we would come back to the City Council for funding for construction. And the total of this is adding $7.9 million to the CIP program. There's other things addressed in this staff report, including changes to the city's current staffing plan. It includes reclassifying two existing positions. It includes replacing our current vacant department assistant position that served as our PIO and making that a marketing assistant for recruitment purposes. It's the same salary range. It's just really a change in job description and title. So that is at no cost to the city. And we currently have a public works inspector position that the City Council approved back in September. The staff is recommending that the City Council approve upgrading that position from Public Works Inspector to Senior Public Works Inspector. And also, the Community Development and Economic Development Department has reviewed the cost of the contracting services for building inspection and building plan check based on their recent RFP process, and staff would like to move those services from a contract to more of a hybrid in-house with the building inspector and building official position, two positions, and still have some of the building plan check services contracted out based on workload of those two people. The staff report talks about the cost savings. We have paid our current vendor over $500,000 annually. We estimate the cost of these two positions plus taking into account approximately $60,000 of contracting out building plan check would cost the city about $300,000 or so. So that's a net savings to the general fund based on average revenues and expenditures in our building permit area. So we have a number of recommendations for City Council tonight, and we are asking you to approve our budget adjustments, approve our changes to our staff plan, and if you approve our changes to our staff plan, then please approve the two resolutions that relate to those changes. This completes my staff report, and me and the executive team are happy to answer any questions you have.
Question of the city attorney. If we're looking at HR positions, Do we do that publicly or do we do that in a closed session? Because we're going to be discussing positions, correct?
Yes, Mayor. I think it depends on if it's simply just a discussion about the budget, whether to have a, you know, that position in the budget or what level of that position. I think that's fine to discuss here. It's a generic discussion about the position.
Not the individual, yes.
Just check. Okay, Yuri, we'll start with you. Questions, please.
Thank you so much. I am so pleased with this report. I love that we have so much extra money. I hope some of that ends up in the reserve and not just spent. But I'm very pleased and I'm glad that we have the possibility of reassigning certain classifications. I think our staff that support and that upgrade. And I also hope
well done. Happy to see money in the rainy day fund because winter's coming. So let's be careful and be prudent.
Oh yeah, the thing that I think I'm most pleased with is the fact that the changes in our personnel staff is going to make us much more efficient in providing services. Also, one of the positions is going to actually bring revenue into the city, which I think is wise that we are now doing that in-house instead of contracting it out. And I kind of believe that if that one position comes to fruition, that the money that we'll get out of that will help pay for all of our positions or help pay a partial cost of all of our positions, which I think is going to be a savings. You know, a lot of times we are a contract city, so we move everything out because we think we can save more money by not having to pay certain benefits. That's true with some things, but when we have to pay additionally for the person and they get paid by what they do on the contract, kind of like compensation, then we're losing money. And so the more that we can keep it in-house, I think the better off we're going to be. Everybody said, you know, it's great to have the money, but the future is going to be very challenging. And so we have to be very careful with every penny that we have and continue down and saving as much money as we can. Okay, so that is item 15A, and we have five recommended actions. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Is there a motion?
I'll move it.
Okay, we have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez and a second by
Councilmember Taylor.
You got it.
I'll now proceed with the roll call vote. Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Warren?
Yes.
Councilmember Van?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez?
Yes.
And Mayor Schauer?
Yes.
So item passes.
Yes, we are now at item number 16, which is oral communication. At this time, members of the public may address the City Council, the successor agency, the Stanton Housing Authority, regarding any items within the matter jurisdiction of the City Council, successor agency, Housing Authority, provided that no action be taken on non-agenda items. When you come up, please let the clerk know who you are, and your time will be limited to 3 minutes. So at this time, I'm going to open public hearing, and our first request to speak is Mr. Guerrero. Please come up.
Almost. A lot of noise.
Mr. Guerrero, could you put the mic and right in there? Sorry.
Okay.
There you go. That's perfect. Thank you.
Well, I got a complaint in 2017 and complained by the CR. They make a lot of noise. They make a lot of smell. And so all these years, I come over here to make a complaint. They stopped for a couple months, and they continue doing again every Saturday. I got the proof right. I got all kinds of stuff, and guys don't do anything about it. I come over here with a talk to the manager in the city, and they help me a lot, but it's still continue doing all the noises every day. But I need solutions, problems that I got right now. Even my neighbors, all my neighbors, they talk to me, say, oh, I can help you to do it. They can let us for every time that I come over here. So I can call my neighbor right now. I can talk right now.
No, sir.
Mr. Grow, if you could get a card from our public safety director, Mr. Wren, hold your hand up right here. If you would provide all that information to him, he'll be working with the city manager and with Mr. Ames, and then that then can be information can be given to the council. Please.
A lot of years already. I got tired.
We understand that we can't take any action on this item tonight because it's not on our agenda. However, we are more than willing to work with you and to take a look at whatever information you can provide. And so Mr. Wren, Mr. Ames, and our city manager, Mr. Hildebrand, will be more than happy to meet with you. You're more than
Mr.
welcome.
Mr. Hildebrand, we've already done something on this in the past, haven't we?
Yeah, this isn't a new issue, unfortunately.
Where's the breakdown? Is it CNR&R keeps doing it?
CNR&R. It's on their storage container storage lot just behind Mr. Guerrero and your neighbor's property on Santa Rosalia. There's an existing CUP that dates back many years that sets hours of operation Monday through Friday. CRNR, and I've seen the video, is out there after hours and even on the weekends moving some shipping containers around. So Chip Monaco, previously at CRNR, and John McNamara, who's their compliance manager, are well aware of it. As Mr. Guerrero stated, it gets better for a couple weeks, a month at a time, and then they slip right back into it.
What would be our next step then?
I would likely defer to the city attorney on that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, next steps.
Mayor and Council, I think we should probably look at the file and work with enforcement in terms of what the next steps are from here. I could certainly be part of the team that is going to be documents.
Obviously, it's been going on for a long time.
Quite a while. Yeah, 2017, Mr. Guerrero had a lot of paperwork. I think he and I have discussed this extensively. It's an unfortunate situation. Part of it, too, from CRNR is tracking down where the noise is coming from because it's right adjacent to the recycling facility as well. And they do move containers at the recycling facility site. Noise travels. So while we've seen video of the container forklifts driving on Saturday, CRNR acknowledges that and says, yeah, we're out here, we shouldn't have done it. We'll crack the whip on operations, which they do, but obviously the problem still persists.
Are there any fines associated with them violating the
CUP?
Yes, and again, it's something that Mayor and Council probably want to take a look offline, given that CRNR isn't here to be able to respond to these kind of claims. So I would suggest that we would take a second look at it. But yes, in terms of violation, generally speaking about conditions of approval, if there are violations that, you know, prove up and there's evidence, then yes, there's administrative fines that can happen, several enforcement mechanisms that we have, the city has. But we haven't issued any fines, despite it happening for several years. I'm not aware, Mayor Council.
You know, I think probably the best solution to this is kind of like what my recommendation was. We can't take any action tonight, but now our staff is fully aware of it. The council is fully aware of it. I think we need to get all the information back to the council. We will thoroughly have it looked at by our staff. And I'm sure that we'll be having our representatives meeting with the CRR people. Thank you, Mr. Guerrero.
Thanks, sir.
Is there anyone else who would like to address the City Council at this? Yes, come up, please.
Perfect. And then just state your name for the record, please.
Yes, it's Esther Mendoza. And I just want to thank tonight's council. Adopting map C2, thank Mr. Warren for all his hard work, and also for looking at my emails that I sent a couple of weeks ago about the homeless situation. I want to thank you for that, addressing that, because it has improved quite a bit. That's over at Cross Point Village on Garden Grove and Village Center Drive and Beach Boulevard. So thank you so much for addressing my emails. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. You know, sometimes we never get anybody saying thank you. And you know what? It's always nice to find out that we actually made somebody happy. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
It made our night. Anyone else want to address the council at this time? Okay, if not, I'll go ahead and close the public hearing. And we are now on item 17, written communications.
We have none.
We have none. Mayor, chairman, council, agency, authority, initiated business.
That would be item 18A, announcement.
Okay.
18 is the title. So
you got it, okay. Anybody have any announcements? Yes, go ahead.
So we had a very successful open garden event this past Saturday. Thank you so much to Mayor Shaver and Ms. Warren for attending. We had a ton of gardeners show up, a lot of kids show up, even the Girl Scouts came and asked for a plot, so we're very excited to be able to provide them with that opportunity to engage with the community and work with their hands and touch with nature. And I also wanted to say that the Orange County Public Library has a new program called Zip Books. And what that does is, if there's a book that you want to borrow, but it's not available in the catalog, the public library catalog, request it through the website, and they'll purchase it directly from Amazon and ship it to your house. Wow. So that you can have access to that book, and then you return it to the library, and that becomes part of the circulation. That gives you an opportunity to suggest books that you think the library should be having for the general public that is not already in there. So it's a great way to expand the types of books that are available in our catalog. And the second program I want to announce is books through mail. So if you know of anyone who is unable to leave their home or due to some disability, can't go to the public library, the library will be able to mail them books to their house, and then they will also pay for return shipping from their house to the library. So that is a great service that we're now offering to the public, so that everyone can use the library.
Yes, go ahead, girl.
Thank you. Gary? Okay. There you go.
I just had a couple. We just had probably one of the largest and most successful food drives in Stanton. It was really cool because the community really pulled together. The churches, the Boy Scouts, the Vietnamese community, the Hispanic community. And we actually served over 1,000 people that day between 10 and 1. So it was a great turnout. I think it's interesting because it kind of supplements what a great job that Zinnia and her group does on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I appreciate the support that we did get from the city. And I think that, we kind of know who our customers are because they're the people that really need it. I'm in the process of trying to open a food pantry in the city of Stanton to supplement some of the things that are going on now. So I'm very excited about that opportunity. And I appreciate again all the help the staff gave me that day. If you'd like to mark your calendar for April the 2nd, I'm going to have an all Orange County support for the Ukrainian people. I'm working with a couple of people, the Student Society, the Ukrainian Student Society USS, and also I'm working with the Consul General of Ukraine. And also Lou Korea is helping me. And so it's kind of like what we did for the Burmese people. I thought that was very appropriate. I think this is going to be a little bit bigger because it really it's more on more people really realize how horrible it is. And so we're going to try to get some aid. The reason I got Lou involved was I want to make sure that whatever we get here ends up in the right hands. Who knows what will happen by the time April 2nd rolls around. But I felt that it was good for our community to show that
like everything, we do care about people in other countries. So we will be doing that. And I want to appreciate that. I ran it all by our city staff, and they seem very happy with that. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, we'll move on to our next one, which is 18B. Any items for a future meeting? Okay. I have had a chance to talk to our city manager and our city attorney about, we have a lot of land in our city that is pretty ugly, and it's undeveloped, and it's been that way for years. And there's not much happening with development. There's not a lot happening with any kind of change. Some of it's on the heart of our community. And to me, it's blight. And I know that there's many public uses for that land that we might be able to entertain. And so I'm asking that for discussion only, that we look into the opportunity to do intent of eminent domain letters to some of the people that own those properties. Now, an eminent domain letter just simply is the way you start the process. It's just a notification that there's an interest in doing that. Sometimes it actually motivates the property owners to sit down and take a look at what they're really doing, especially those that are unrealistic and maybe in what they want to do, and the fact that they don't really care about the city. Even the next step after that would be something that is not very expensive, and that's just getting an evaluation or some kind of an appraisal. Those two things oftentimes, like I said, give the property owner the idea that we really care as a city and that we really want to get something going there. So it'll be something that we can discuss, and see what direction the council wants to go with that. Anyway, yes, Carol.
Earlier last year, we created a tool for the city to use to find these people. And if we find them, they will instantly start feeling pain from that and get into action. So maybe we get aggressive with our fine program as well as send the letter just to get these people thinking about what they're going to do with their property, either sell them or develop them or something.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. We really can't do much tonight because it's not on the agenda, but I think all of us probably have some great ideas on how maybe we can turn this. I mean, we've done such a good job with so many of our areas. I'll give you an example. The good news is that the OCTA has just granted the development of that large thing in the heart of our city. That's all going to be landscaped, cleaned up, and beautified. So it's something we can do, but we got to do it as a team. And I think that meeting on that and talking about some of the blighted areas in our community that we need to address. We don't have a lot of them, but some of them are in key locations in our community. Anyway, thank you for that. We'll now move on to the next item, which is, where am I here? Where am
item,
I at?
City clerk? Item 18C, items for a future study session.
Anybody want a future study session? Okay, I don't
currently
either.
We do have one, and hearing none.
Yeah, currently one. The study session we're planning for is the update on homelessness in town. We were planning for the 3/22 meeting. However, director will be on vacation that week, and we need director in here. So we are going to punt that to 4/12. So makes it.
Will we have the results of our survey by then?
The point in time count survey.
Yes.
Yeah, because maybe it's better to put it off till we get that survey results. I think it's good to have that if we're going to have that meeting to find out what our numbers are.
Sure.
Okay, great. That'll work out good. Okay, items from our esteemed attorney.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I have no items tonight.
Okay, and from our city manager.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Recognizing OCFA is on the agenda, I'll announce for the Sheriff's Department they have Coffee with a Cop coming up March 16th. This is in collaboration with the Stanton Community Engagement Advisory Committee, SEAC. It is going to be Wednesday, March 16th from 10:30 to noon at Stanton Central Park. That's all, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, now that you mentioned the Fire Authority, we did get a letter from Cypress College thanking us for the donation of the table. And by the way, the Man of the Year is our own chief of the Fire Authority. You know, it's going to be Brian Tennessee, so that's going to be really cool.
Okay, we'll now get a report from the Fire Authority.
Good evening, Mayor Shriver, Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez, Council Members Taylor, Warren, and Van. It's a pleasure to be with you this evening. I apologize for my schedule not allowing me to be here last month. The statistical report is pretty much within our norms. We ran 307 incidents in the city proper, most of those being EMS rescue calls. We had 15 fires, 15 calls for service, and 277 emergency medical responses. In the unincorporated areas of Stanton, we had a total of 42 calls. I'm sorry, a total of 49 calls, three fires, four calls for service, and 42 EMS-related calls. Those were, again, within our normal response for a month. We didn't have any major incidents within the city during that reporting period. The statistical report for 2021 was released today. And within the city of Stanton last year, calendar year of 2021, ran a total of 3,892 responses in the city, which is up slightly, but expected as we see a little population growth as well. From the previous year, we were able to conduct, even with the restrictions of COVID, a total of 13 community outreach programs within the city. And I'll be mailing the detailed report to the city manager for distribution, city council, for reading pleasure. One of the things that's coming up here in early spring is our Girls Empowerment Camp. And don't let the title misleading. It is opened to girls and boys ages 14 to 18. It's hosted at our headquarters at Fire Authority Road in Irvine, conducted on May 14th and 15th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. each day. There is no cost to this. Registration opens April 1st, and for additional information, residents can go to the website to register for this event. Again, it's our outreach program introducing the fire service to young people that might be interested in pursuing a career fire service. COVID restrictions are easing. A lot of almost back to normals with the OCFA. So our headquarters is open, other than to allow others outside the agency to use our classroom conference. But from a business practices standpoint, both in our satellite offices and at headquarters, we're back to normal. With engagements with schools, we'll be following whatever that particular school district has for protocol. But basically, after 2 years of taking a break from being in schools and doing school programs, engaging back in those environments, we'll do school programs, but we would limit children to not utilize or touch our apparatus just to keep our employee group safe. So again, an easing back into normal our outreach as well. And I'd like to say that the good news is on the COVID front, when we talked back in December, we had around the Christmas holiday time, a total of 144 people out with COVID, down to six people as of this morning out with COVID. And thankfully, during the last 24 months of this, none of our employees have been critically ill with it, nor have we had any fatalities. That's a good. On the public or fire safety rescue safety message, bringing the attention of electrical fires nationally, over 80,000 incidents with a total of $1.3 billion in property loss happen each year in the United States. Fire. It's a reminder, the biggest culprit of this is overloading a circuit. Residents of Stanton, we see this throughout the entire jurisdiction, electrical fires caused by simply overloading a circuit or using extension cords, fixed wiring. The message to our residents is simply big appliances need to be plugged directly into walls. Extension cords should plugged or not be used for wiring. It should not be run underneath carpet or in traffic areas. And certainly not to overload circuits. Additionally, as some of you might know, this is March has traditionally been a retirement month for the Orange County Fire Authority and most county agencies. In the next 30 days, there will be some changes within the organization. The OCFA will introduce a new operations chief. We'll announce division chiefs. up to, depending on successful completion of our examination process, up to 12 new battalion chiefs, and we will have 17 captains within, again, all this within the next 30 days. So quite a lot of change. We also will have the Engineers Academy completion next 4 weeks. We have ongoing a current firefighter recruit academy. One of those retirements includes myself. I've served in the fire service for 38 years, 35 of those years professionally, nearly 33 of those years with the Orange County Fire Authority. And it has been my privilege and pleasure to serve as your fire chief for the last 2 years. I regret the fact that COVID has slowed the development substantially with developing relationships with city staff and with the city council. But the time has come for me to turn the page, happy and healthy, but the time has come for me to leave, so my last effective day will be March 3rd. That concludes my remarks, and I'll take any questions.
Any questions for the chief?
Congratulations.
Thank you for your service. And you've done a stellar job for the OCFA also, I know that. So thank you very much. Okay, we're not going to adjourn. I believe we're just going to go back into closed session. So if anybody wants to stick around, we'll be out. But we're going to come back to probably close the meeting. So just, and I will be closing the meeting. I'll be closing the meeting tonight, just so you know, for Women's History Month, which we'll be talking about later. Thank you.
City Council is adjourned into closed session at 8:31 p.m.
Okay, I'm going to go back into the City Council meeting. Madam Clerk, do we have anything to report out of our closed session?
Mayor and Council, there's nothing to report out.
Okay, thank you. So again, I'm going to dismiss or adjourn the meeting tonight in honor of Women's History Month.